high atop the pastoral center of the Diocese of Camden, you're listening to Talking Catholic.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Talking Catholic. Happy Easter, Mike. I'm here with you, and I'm excited to be back.
Happy Easter, Carrie. So nice. Actually, I'm exhausted. It was a very, 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 very busy Holy Week, and but it was as wonderful as I've ever remembered it.
So true, so true. I actually saw more posts this Easter Monday of pastors about how exhausted they are than I ever have on social media. I was like, wow, that really makes a lot of sense, because me as a layperson who just has minimal work to do to prepare, you know, our OCIA candidates and catechumens and the little behind the details that go on in Holy Week and the Triduum particularly, I was tired. So I was like, man, these pastors that are saying masses, homilies, and preparations, church decorations, all of that, they got to be spent. So,
but you know what?
We're feeling it, but they're feeling it too.
I went to five parishes over the from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday. And I got to tell you, every parish I went into, the pastors were elated. Now, I don't know if that was just because their boss was there, but they, I'm telling you, across the board, they were absolutely having a blast. And you could actually, like, it was a strange feeling, because I've covered a lot of Holy Weeks over the last 8 years. I will say this was probably the most joyous one I'd ever been a part of. Like, even the music sounded better this year. I wish I could tell you what cultural thing is going on right now. That
I think it's a movement of the Holy Spirit, because
it must have been.
I was talking on Easter Monday as well. Actually, it was Easter Sunday, because I go to the vigil and then I don't go. Did you have a Mass Easter Sunday too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that was my day kind of off as well. And on Easter Sunday, I was talking with some friends, some priest friends and such, and we were saying how beautiful the vigils were. And I said, it just hit differently this year. Like, it was a different kind of joy, enthusiasm, excitement. And I couldn't put my finger on what it was. So it's something across the board. It's definitely a movement of the Holy Spirit
well,
this time.
I have no argument with that, because you know I rely on the Holy Spirit more in my career now than I ever did in the secular world. So I have a much greater appreciation for the power of the Holy Spirit, and I agree with you. But, you know, we could ask somebody else who is joining us
We have one of those tired pastors.
We have a tired pastor with us, exactly. Right.
And he's my boss.
He is. We have, so introduce him.
Yes, so we have with us Father John Rossi. He is the pastor of St. Bridget University Parish and also the chaplain of the Newman House here at Rowan Catholic Campus Ministry.
It's great to be with you today.
Thanks, Father.
No, we're excited. This is great. You know, we get to, I record down in the Newman House with some great regularity. We can't get Carrie out of here, which is a great thing for Newman House, so it's nice that you could join us. This is sweet.
Actually, it's kind of funny. I remember our first time recording with Father, you might remember this. I think it was on the Advent season, probably like 10 years
ago.
Yeah, I remember recording with you. Now here we are, Easter season, and working together. It's like time just, it just goes by. It's so crazy.
Right, that was back at Our Lady of Peace.
I think you had a studio
in the basement.
Yeah,
somewhere.
It was quite some time ago.
Yeah, it was. But that was a great conversation. We always like doing the seasonal conversations, the seasonal episodes, because we always learn something new. And to that point, if anyone did not hear the Father Stephen Robbins episode,
Phenomenal.
I'm going to cut out the 10 minutes of us bantering beforehand, so people just listen to Father Stephen Robbins. Mm-hmm. He did a great job. We've done those seasonal episodes many times over the years, and that's a top two.
That's an award-winning
one.
I'm
sending that in.
It was so well done.
He was really
good. I rarely do this. I texted him after listening to it. I said, great job on the Talking Catholic podcast. You know, I listen to them regularly as much as possible. And when someone definitely does well above and beyond, it was like, oh, I have to just tell him. It was so good.
He did.
And I even sent it to our students and said, listen to this. Like, you're going to learn a lot about the Triduum.
Yeah. Yeah. We may never do another Holy Week episode again. I'm just going to rerun that every single year. So, Father Rossi, are you as tired as all the other pastors out there?
I don't think so. I've recharged it a little bit. My
very
day
nice.
Off was on Tuesday, and I had a good day yesterday to rest up with all this rain.
That
was good.
Not much you could do outside right now.
No, that is true. You know what? You might be right. I think the Holy Spirit was looking after us that way. Stay inside, get your rest, take some naps. In my case, I did laundry. So was it a successful Holy Week at St. Bridget's
It was
Parish?
Wonderful.
Really?
Yeah.
That is good to hear.
I think it was a successful Holy Week and Easter because it was a great Lent.
Yeah.
I think we really lived Lent well. Mm-hmm. We really got into it this year with all the things going on in our parish and the Newman House ministry.
Yeah, we had a great opportunity here. And I know you don't like it when I talk about other apps and podcasts, but
you know I don't.
It was the Hallow app. We had a wonderful opportunity to have the subscription to that at a very, very low, affordable cost of $1 for the entire season of Lent. And just like they said it would, it cut off on April 1st. I tried to go into the Divine Mercy Chapel to do my novena, and boom, it was not accessible. But to have it for $1 over that course and listen through the Pray 40 Challenge, He Leadeth Me, particularly meditation. On that was just phenomenal, and our parishioners, our students, everyone, and
got
that was
a lot
from
of
you,
great
Father.
Feedback.
I heard the same thing. My wife did it, and I heard other parishes were doing it as well, and I heard nothing but great things across the board. So that was, I don't know if that, you know, my jaded self as a PR guy, I don't know if that was a plan by Hallow to, you know, really get people interested in the app. It probably was, but man, I think to your point, to the both of your points, I think it really served Lent well this year that people had access to something like that.
It gave everyone a focus, at least here, I have to say. Mm-hmm. The students and some of the parishioners, and myself included, mm-hmm. I didn't miss a day. I was listening to those reflections, and it really just centered me on what we were doing and how important it is to enter into that holy mm-hmm. season to get ready for Easter.
Yeah.
We played it around the house a lot. We pray a rosary daily here at certain times, and then after rosary we'd come out and we'd put it on the speaker and just kind of have the house quiet and listen for that 10 or 15, 20 minutes, whatever it was. And if it wasn't playing at the house, there was a conversation in our group chat going on, like, who listened today? It was so great. I recommend listening. So really just served us well, as Father said, for a Lent. And when you have that kind of coming into Holy Week, that spiritual tone has been set now for the 40 days. Like, you are so ready and so excited for all that's to come at that Easter Mass, especially for us at the Easter Vigil, which was just phenomenal. We had 9 people make their sacraments. 6 of them were students here at Rowan. One is a student in quotes. We'll hear from her shortly. But 6 of the college age, and then 3 adult parishioners. And it was
a fairly senior person too, right?
Yes, yeah. It was a married couple, and yes.
What the deal was? Okay,
yeah, a little more senior ended.
Yeah, it was funny because you do a great job, Carrie, of always posting photos from the parish, and so I couldn't be there because, you know, I was doing the bishops. Mm-hmm. And as I'm looking at the vigil photos, I went, oh yeah, kid, there's a older fella there. I was like, that made me very happy.
Yeah, non-traditional college student. they're from the parish and they've been attending Mass regularly since last Easter. Easter was their kind of anniversary of their first Catholic Mass. One was already baptized Catholic and one was not. And so the wife needed communion and confirmation, and the husband fully initiated baptism, communion, and confirmation. So it was really joyous for them as a couple to be traveling through this whole year of taking classes together.
That's really sweet. I'm not sure. I don't know that I've ever known a couple. In your time as a priest, Father, have you had that sort of situation where you've either baptized or did the full boat?
Not a couple together. Yeah. Usually, they're
I've
coming.
Seen sponsor.
Yeah,
yeah. Sponsor.
Yeah, I've seen sponsor and candidate, but never together.
That's really unique.
Yeah,
you know what that's called, Carrie? That's called a feature idea for the Catholic Star Herald to look into.
Where is Jennifer?
I know. Well, she is currently in Germany.
I saw that. Yeah, she's enjoying herself.
But when she gets back, that sounds like a feature story for a future.
That sounds good.
If not a future podcast.
Yeah, and it's really beautiful how this other family really invited them into the church. I mean, it's evangelization at its core, for sure. And bringing them to Mass and being their, and it was their sponsors.
That's really sweet.
Another married couple. So
look at that.
It is a good story.
You know, it's
feel
funny.
Feel free to use it.
I think we've mentioned this on the podcast before, and Father Osmond, I even mentioned it with you. The fact that the Holy Week is such a peculiar week in the Catholic Church, and not from a spiritual standpoint. It's beautiful and blessed from a spiritual standpoint. But when you think about it, you know, it's a solemn. There's a lot of sadness, and you know, there's some terrible things that happen. You know, from both a human perspective and a divine perspective. Well, maybe not from a divine perspective. But then there are these moments of absolute joy that occur during Holy Week that I absolutely love.
Even Holy Thursday.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like in the midst of, we're just about to, Jesus about to, is betrayed. He is betrayed in that mass. And then, but yet the Gloria was sung, you know.
Yeah.
During it. It was just like this kind of break in the solemnness to have some joy. The institution of the Eucharist, the institution of the priesthood, yeah. You know, and then kind of crashing down for the next day of that solemn time of Good Friday. And that was really beautiful. I would have to say something differently about this Good Friday as well. We're really blessed at St. Bridget's to have a fragment of the True Cross, mm-hmm. and to venerate that, and just people's solemnness, even their emotion to see and witness. Even my own son, I didn't tell him what to do. I just said, go up and, you know, you can mm-hmm. give Jesus a kiss or whatever. He like genuflected all perfectly and like put his hand on the relic and then like I did some form of kissing to his feet, and I was like, oh my gosh, like I wanted to burst into tears right there. It was just overflowed my heart just to see that. But even just our students and the elderly parishioners and everyone going up and showing their own form of veneration of the cross, it was really beautiful.
Yeah.
I love Holy Week. Kind of sad it's over.
No,
it's a joyful Easter now. We gotta love this Easter joy.
No, we got 50 days of joy.
That's really,
that's my intent this year is for that Easter season. You know, for all our listeners who think that Easter Sunday is a day, it's an entire season and it's longer than Lent. You know, we really need to mm-hmm. lean into the joy of the Easter season and the fact that it continues on and on and on for weeks. So let's make sure that, as Bishop said in his homily during the vigil mass, you know, keep Christ risen with us. You know, it's in your heart the entire time.
One of my favorite quotes by St. John Paul II: "We are Easter people, and Hallelujah is our song." So we are Easter people. Like,
well said.
Always.
Now, speaking of unique Catholic icons. Like the ones that we've mentioned recently. This is actually a very special episode because we're going to do a movie review, mm-hmm. A movie that I have not watched. It's fine. This person's a real person. I know the deal with her, so I haven't seen the movie yet. But I will say, keep in mind, it did take me 4 years to watch the first three seasons of The Chosen. So, you know, eventually I get there. It takes a little while, but I'm actually saving season 4 when it comes out on streaming mm-hmm. for Advent, since I watched the previous seasons all this Lent, which I found, great.
I actually haven't seen The Chosen, so if that makes you feel better.
I haven't either.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I was resisting it, and then I was having a conversation with my boss, Father Hughes, about Lent, and I hadn't really thought of anything to do for Lent. He's like, Mike,
there you go.
Sit down and watch The Chosen throughout Lent. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And I...
Yeah, because you like to binge Netflix.
I do.
Stuff.
I'm a binger.
See, that's the reason I don't watch it, because I don't like to
binge.
Well,
what I did was I walked on my treadmill every night, and I watched it. And I got a lot of walking in, because I was told that they were like 45-minute episodes. Some of them were like an hour and 15, an hour and 30. So I got a lot of exercise in, which I wasn't anticipating.
That's a good way to kill two birds with one stone.
But I was so... I got really annoyed with Father Hughes a couple of times, because, you know, I'm jaded and you know, things like that. And there were some episodes and some scenes that really, like, I had a visceral reaction to. And I did, you know, I was like, and I got, I, and it really made, it made me, like, look at, in, sort of look inside myself and decide, you know, what I was doing and what I could be doing better. And I didn't want to make any changes. So I keep,
well, that shows it was a good Lent for
you,
Mike.
It was a good Lent for me. Father Hughes coerced me into watching The Chosen. There were parts of it that spoke to me. But that is not why we are. We're not reviewing The Chosen.
That's another podcast
That's
for
right.
another day.
We'll do that another time. No, we're reviewing Cabrini.
Yes.
The new movie Cabrini. And we have Father John Rossi on to help with that, mm-hmm. along with two other guests who can now turn their microphones on and let us know who they are. To my right is...
I'm Sam Brown from Gloucester Catholic.
Hi, Sam. And Sam, you are a sophomore at Gloucester Catholic?
I am.
That's right.
All right. Welcome, Sam.
And I've known Sam for many years. She and my son went to school together all through grade school, so big fan of the Sam Brown and her family.
And she's also from our parish.
That
she's
is true.
An altar server there and been a faithful attendee of our parish, St. Bridget's.
Altar server extraordinaire, as a matter of fact. She's been in many of the bishops' masses where she's been the altar server.
Good stuff.
And also with us is...
Hi, I'm Candace. I'm freshly Catholic this Easter Vigil.
Woohoo!
Carrie taught me RCIA, and Father Rossi gave me all three of my sacraments, so that's very cool.
Congratulations.
Yay.
And you
the
were
chrism still smells fresh on her forehead.
Yeah.
Freshly minted Catholics, always the nicest smelling. And she's quite joyful as well. She's you always mint the peppiest Catholics, Carrie. So good job with that.
Try.
So, but it's a peculiar connection here, right? Like, not a Rowan student.
Go ahead, Candace.
I don't go here. I just live in the area. I live about 10, 15 minutes from Rowan. And I have a friend that goes to Rowan, and in a strange circumstance, that person is friends with the president of the Newman House, the president of Rowan Catholic. And so our president invited me out to my first Mass. I was already considering becoming Catholic and was sort of just putting it off. And so I went to my first Mass last September, and I've been going every week since, and every day since, or not every day, but
sometimes it's daily Mass.
Occasionally, yeah. Not every day. here and there. Consistently. And was basically didn't hesitate to sign up for RCIA, and very glad that I did.
She was a great student, absorbed the information well, and already knew a lot coming in as well. There was a fair amount that she was able to really just expand on as we taught it in the class, which is really always good to have students like that in your class.
And picked a great name, too, for confirmation. Do you want to share a little bit about
that?
Oh,
yeah. St. Hildegard.
Oh, there's a mouthful right there. What drew you to St. Hildegard? What drew you to St. Hildegard as your saint?
So I wasn't initially drawn to St. Hildegard because I didn't know anything about her. And so I had initially picked a different saint. And in the last 2 weeks before I was supposed to get, baptized and confirmed and all that, I just started watching all these YouTube videos about her and, her theology and listening to the music that she wrote and the languages that she wrote down that previously didn't exist. So she, I think it's purported that it's like divine revelation that she was given these words and her beautiful paintings of her conception of the universe and God and all of that. And she's just this total polymath. I think she's good at everything. And
wow.
I really, really like her. And as a aspiration, I don't think that's a bad one. I think.
Well,
I like her and feel very drawn to her.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, awesome. I'm glad you mentioned that, because in all my time, I've never heard of St. Hildegard. So
check
it out.
She's actually a doctor of the church.
Really got to check her out.
And really good with natural remedies. She has a whole book on them.
Okay.
So if you're into
cookbook
that.
Cookbook slash medical.
Yeah.
Compilation.
She's pretty awesome.
I do enjoy Doctors of the Church. I think that's one of the great titles that the church provides.
She's one of the four female doctors.
I will have to check her out.
She was really loved by Pope Benedict XVI.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think St. Hildegard did a great job of merging theology and different forms of art.
Yes.
Finding different ways to explain the faith in unique ways using nature, and it's amazing. That's the first time I heard someone take that name, and I was really happy.
Yeah, and it was a last minute. It was 2 weeks, not even before, maybe a week.
It was the Monday before the Monday of Holy Week.
Yeah, it's just I really like her. I'm like, you want to change her name? Give me an answer so I can send this email or not. And we did, and it was perfect. And I think, it was, God timed it all perfectly to make it work out. St. Joseph's great. We love him. I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah, that was my first pick.
St. Hildegard definitely suits you well.
Yeah, it certainly. I still love St. Joseph. It feels more correct this way, I think.
Sam, you're 2 years away, 2 years removed from confirmation. Do you remember who your confirmation name is?
I took the confirmation name Carmelina for Our Lady of Mount Carmel.
Oh, very nice. I don't think I've ever heard. I've heard of her, obviously, but I don't think I'd ever heard of anyone taking Carmelina before. Great name, great choice, Sam. I would expect nothing less from you. Thank you. So let's talk about the movie a little bit.
Another scene. Another great female scene.
Yeah.
We are.
Matter of fact, we'll probably get a very annoyed email from our Talking Saints podcast host I'm sure they might want to do
they
something.
They should do a piggyback on this and do a Talking Saints on
Cabrini. But they've actually got the entire year figured out. Who knows? So maybe, I don't know, maybe they did. But yeah, so let's talk about the movie Cabrini, which I know nothing about. And to be quite frank, the only thing I know about Mother Cabrini is Cabrini College.
That's okay.
Which is
closing.
Which is going away. Yeah. I know. It's so sad. I actually know a bunch of alumnus from there, and I said, you know, if that movie had come out 2 years earlier, I wonder if that would have spurned some interest. It would have been nice. But let's talk about the Cabrini movie. First of all, where did everybody see Cabrini?
Okay. So the Angel Studios, who put it out, did a phenomenal job in promoting it leading up to it. I mean, I would see it in my news feeds constantly for a while now. And even prior to that, last October of 22, I believe it was, they did a pre-showing at different theaters, and one of them was in Hamilton. And I have some friends that attended that. Father Rivera helped put it together, actually, and the producer was there present to get feedback from Italian-Americans on what they thought of the movie. And so I had some friends that saw it there and said, oh, it's really great. And then I didn't hear anything about it, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I remember seeing an article in the Star Herald about it coming into theaters, and I was like, is this the same movie that was out like in 22, like fall 22? And I checked with my friend, and sure enough, it was. So I've been seeing things then being promoted through Instagram and Facebook ads. One of them was tickets at $5 a piece.
Oh, cool.
And you could get up to 10. I was like, this Father, can we get these? Like $50 for 10 people to go to a movie. Yeah. It's like unheard of. So we picked them up, those 10. And our students took 9 of them, and Father Rossi took one, and he saw it on his day off, and we saw it as a student group, 9 of us, at Voorhees. The reason was you had to put your ticket codes in to reserve your seats. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it was spring break the week it came out. And I'm like, okay, I know how these Catholic movies go. They go like day by day in the theaters. If they're doing well, they keep it. If they're not, they're not, you know? And I would have loved to have seen it in Washington Township, United Artists, with the nice reclining seats.
Yeah.
But because it was spring break, they didn't have it showing more in advance, like a week out. But Voorhees did have it a week out. So we booked for March 18th, which was the Monday after spring break. And there's a group of us, myself and some students and some local people that attended. And it was really great. So I saw it in Voorhees.
Well, that sounds great.
For $5.
Awesome. But Sam saw it twice.
Yeah, so
right?
She wins.
Yeah, I did. I went with Miss Sober. She led like a group of students. We went during school to the theater in Summerdale. But I was sitting next to my friend, and it was really cold in the theater. So I fell asleep like the last 25 minutes of the movie.
No.
But from what I saw, I was telling my mom, I was like, it's so good. We have to go like see it because I'm coming on a podcast to talk about it. And so we went and seen it yesterday. Same place, same like theater and everything, and I got to see the whole thing, and I jotted notes down.
She took notes while she was watching it too.
It was really dark, and I took the notes.
That's so great. Oh, I can't wait to hear all the notes.
All right, so since I don't know anything about Mother Cabrini, and I certainly don't know anything about the movie, who would like to give an explainer of who Mother Cabrini is?
Okay, I'll do my best.
Who is Mother Cabrini?
Well, Sam has the notes. Maybe. So she's an Italian immigrant.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say that. Yes, she was an Italian immigrant, but she was in Italy with her sisters, and she wanted to be a missionary. And she went to the Pope and asked, and she really wanted to go to the east?
To China.
To
the
China,
far east, yeah.
Okay.
And the Pope basically said, you can't. But he said, I know a lot of Italian, I'm paraphrasing the Pope. I think it was Leo XIII, it was the Pope. And he basically said, your work is more, well, she begged and begged, and he was resistant, and they were really resistant. And I think she had to go 2 times before he actually said yes.
Yeah.
And when he did say yes, he said, there's Italian immigrants in New York who are in need of you. Start there, and then you can go east. And so she took a boat ride, and it's funny, In my own little world, Carrie world, not thinking of the early 1900s, that it was boats. I'm like, oh my gosh, she's gonna fly in a plane there, and then I see the boat. I'm like, wait a minute, oh my gosh! And like the conditions, like on the boat, were difficult. And also, a really important aspect of Mother Cabrini's life was that, and they kept doing flashbacks to it, that she had a drowning situation as a child, and she survived through that and was really praying through that. And in her surviving, had some lingering effects of upper respiratory and lung issues, and you see her coughing throughout it and her health failing at different parts of it. And during that time of on the boat and all of that, the conditions were just terrible, you know. And even when she got to New York, the conditions were not the greatest. And so seeing all that she did just to get here and to serve the people, she came with five other nuns, I believe it was, with her to come and serve the Italian immigrants in New York City. And when they got here, they were not well received at all. Yeah, you know, well received at all. And they were in the slums in New York. And what was it called? Five Points, I believe, was the area it was called. And there was prostitutes going on there. There was just all kinds of orphans, people, the children living in the sewers and on the streets and without family, and who had died, who had passed away, who was just left there. And it was just really difficult conditions. And she started with really nothing, and worked into all of these amazing orphanages and schools, not only in New York City, but all around the world at this point now. And so that's it in a short, you know, but the movie really says it all, like the whole story of her life. And Father, do you have anything to add that I missed maybe along the way, key points?
If I understood correctly, I think it was unique in that she was the first woman to have a missionary order to go abroad.
That is true.
Because that's why the Vatican was so hesitant. They would say, well, we can send an order of priests to China or to a foreign country, and they can start a mission, but we can't send a group of religious sisters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so she was asking for something, kind of pushing the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And she really stepped up and did what she had to do and really gave a joyful witness as a missionary to the United States, and then it spread throughout the whole world.
Yeah,
and she... I remember the one scene from to kind of piggyback on what Father said, being the first missionary, woman missionary, the Pope said to her basically, what happens here for you is going to determine if other women can be missionaries or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was like almost like this weight of it, like if I fail, like this is never going to happen. And we look at people like St. Mother Teresa and all these other missionaries that because of her paving the way. And I think that's why the producers really took to meet the general population of moviegoers. It wasn't really for the, it was for the Catholic, it was. I mean, we love it, we enjoy it, but it's really for everyone. And they really took the stance on you know, women, empowering women.
Yeah.
And you see that woven throughout the movie. You also see they've released it intentionally on International Women's Day, you know, March 8th. They did a lot of like key advertising in that sense so that it could reach the unchurched. And I think it was really genius in what they did in that. Candace, we had a great conversation about that here, about how the producers chose to do that. And if you wanted to add anything else, because we were talking about that here at Newman the one day.
Yeah. So I went and saw the movie actually on the same day as you and the people from Rowan just earlier in the day.
That's right.
Because my mom wanted to see it, and my mom is not Catholic. So she had saw some like Facebook advertisements or something. And so she, you know, she wanted to see the movie. We went out and we saw it, and it really was perfect for somebody like her, where, you know, she did, I think, initially want to watch the movie because, like, oh, it's about like some strong woman, but now she knows the life of a saint that she otherwise wouldn't have known. And I think that the movie is something that is so well done in that it can be enjoyed by anybody, and that the target audience really is maybe, you know, a lukewarm Catholic who has maybe fallen into like the trappings of feminism, or like, you know, your like atheist cousin who is really into history. Or, and like, these people can be drawn into this movie. They don't have to be Catholic to realize that it's interesting, and they can watch it, and now they're one step closer to knowing about the church that they otherwise wouldn't have been. And I think that the movie is well done in the fact that it does emphasize the strength of women, but also the differences between men and women in a way, and through doing that, I think that makes the movie in and of itself not feminist.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Because
I can see that.
You know, there's particular things that Cabrini would not have been able to achieve if she were a man.
Mm-hmm.
And there's particular things that, you know, they have different strengths, and those strengths are highlighted throughout the movie.
Well, it's funny because famously in the Catholic Church, it's, you know, well documented about religious women who have had a great impact on popes to move them into a direction they might not otherwise want to move. So it's very important. So Sam, from as the chief note taker, so as Carrie mentioned earlier, this movie is put out by Angel Studios, who, by the way, puts out the Chosen.
That's
and
right.
Is particularly adept now at creating, you know, these sort of religious stories. I'm curious, you as a younger woman, what did you take away from the movie?
I just kind of wrote down like everything that I thought was like really cool that she did. Mm-hmm. And piggybacking off what Candace said, she literally said to like this mayor of this town, she was like, "Med could never do what we do," because mm-hmm. he was like, "You would have been a great man." She was like, "No." She's like, "No, because men can never do what I can do."
That is true.
Yeah, but. Yeah.
That's so true. Her motherly love to the orphans in itself. I mean, there were so many other aspects, but being the mother, the spiritual mother that they needed, I think that was probably part of her comment, and so many other aspects as well. But that just being one of the main ones.
Yeah, she was really mothering. At one part in the movie, these like two boys, they're trying to steal bread from them that they were making for dinner. She's like, "Well, you boys can steal bread from me, or you can just come and join us and eat whatever they were eating for dinner." And the younger boy's like, "Hey, that sounds good. Like, let's do that."
Yeah. And those were two of the main, that was the little boy Enzo and the other.
Paulo, yeah.
And Paulo, yeah.
You know, hearing Sam say that, I'm reminded of another podcast we did recently that unfortunately you weren't able to be on, but when we interviewed the CFRs, mm-hmm. you know, they have this winter shelter down mm-hmm. in Atlantic City. And we asked them like, what made it special? And actually they said something very similar, which was, you know, they don't need more money. They need more sisters because only their charism mm-hmm. is what makes their homeless shelter unique mm-hmm. and that they're able to, like, work with people in a very unique way. So hearing something from 100 years ago and then hearing it modern mm-hmm. times now, there's still some truth to that religious women really do make an impact in ways that nobody else could.
Yeah, so true. And you see that throughout the entire movie. And I think that's what really moved my heart as a mother, you know, not a religious woman, but a lay person, but just to see their love poured out in so much. I mean, they're risking their lives coming to the United States. I mean, they laid their life on the line at that time, in that time period. I just looked up, it was 1889 that they actually came over. And in that time period, like, and I didn't realize this, I'm not a big history buff, I'm gonna just lay that out there, but like how the Italian immigrants were not well received at all at that time. I mean, they were just...
Oh, yeah.
I did not know that. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like thinking like, oh my gosh, my great or great-great... I'm just trying to do the math real quickly. Grandparents and some ancestors of mine came over at some point and were here and were treated that way. And I'm like, wow, I did not know like they had to endure so much, such hardship at that time. And so, and she even said, "We're not here just for the Italians. We're here for all, you know." Mm-hmm. Like, and it wasn't limited to two. And the first hospital that she wanted to make, and by the end of the movie, that's what you see come to fruition, that she had this vision for. She said, "It's not just for the Italians. It's for all, you know." Yeah. This hospital, and that was, she was just so driven by that. But because they were dying because they were not receiving the same treatment that others were receiving was her real focus. And just think, you know, 20, 30 years prior to that, it was the Irish coming over. And then they had, you know, come into a place where they were in a good place. And, you know, she wanted that for the Italians, but she wanted it equally because they were all children of God, and that's the way she saw them. And that was really just something that kind of rose to the top for me. Yeah, and I like to hear each person's, maybe you could think of one of your favorite parts of the movie or highlight, was a question that I have. Because I will say for me, it was the point where with Paulo and Enzo, which is these two young men who you follow kind of throughout the movie. Actually, the very opening scene is Paulo with his mother dying in a little push cart that he's driving, like pushing her all around, trying to find somebody to help her, a doctor to help her. And she ends up passing. And it's because nobody would take his mother in to try to help them, to help her in the hospital. And she was just on her deathbed.
It's also mentioned that beforehand, before his mother got sick, his father killed himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he was one of the orphans then that you kind of followed through. And, so he's in this opening scene and you're like, what's going on here? You know, it's really beautifully done. Actually, from an artistic point of view, as someone who's artistic and I really love cinematography. I've always had like a great like just joy of watching movies that are done well, really well done, really well done from that angle.
Well, actually, that's the question. That was actually going to be the question I asked everybody, which is a lot of times Christian movies come across a little amateurish, unfortunately.
Because I think, way to put it.
Well, they're done by well-meaning people who may not have the cinematography skills to really put together a great. But this movie like looked and felt like a real.
Oh yes,
it was genuinely so interesting. Like, there wasn't a single point in the movie where you were bored. It was 2.5 hours long. It didn't feel like that. You were just so drawn into it. It was so visually beautiful. The acting was so good. Like, it wasn't corny at all, which is like another thing that would like,
you're
for
right.
example, like turn away somebody like my mom, or she'd be like, ooh, they're, you know, getting all touchy-feely about something. And instead of just showing you like the raw emotion, right? Like, you know. And so it was really good on that front, where they did a lot of visual showing you of things instead of a verbalization of it, which I think makes all the difference in the quality and enjoyability of it.
Yeah.
Even though I fell asleep during the first one.
We're not going to hold that against you.
Yeah, it surprised me that I fell asleep, because up until that point, I was so into the movie.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
I was watching it with my mom, we were both like, oh my God, I have to go to the bathroom. And neither of us would get up because it was just like so good.
It locked you in.
We were like, we don't want to miss what's happening, or else we have to pee.
Well, that's good to hear, because that is something that tends to keep me away from religious movies, because oftentimes they're not well produced.
No, I agree. And I always worry about that. And there's been some that I've been really let down on. You know, I will say the feeling I got after watching this on the cinematography and the way it was artistically represented, I got that after The Passion of the Christ too. I was like, this was so well done. But it was Mel Gibson, so you kind of expected it to be well done.
Right.
Whereas this, you're like, I didn't expect that at all. Like, I'm so glad it was well done.
One of the critiques I heard before I went to see the movie, some people were saying they didn't mention Jesus enough. They didn't show enough of her prayer life and what she was doing in her prayers. And I thought, well, let's go see. I'm keeping an open mind. The movie is 2.5 hours. So I don't know how much they could have put in. That's a very personal, private part of her life. Obviously, she was praying to accomplish all that she was doing. But I think sometimes in some of the faith-based films, they can get a little too preachy, and it turns people off.
Yeah.
Whereas with Cabrini, you're drawn into this beautiful cinematography and view of what New York City used to be like, and how they brought you right into that period in history.
Oh, yes.
And you saw for yourself all the things that were stacked up against her and all the obstacles. And then you really appreciated how God's grace could only get her through these impossible situations.
Yeah.
And you see that for the 2.5 hours. It just constantly draws you in and impresses you with what a great woman in American history and Catholic history they produced this film about.
I totally agree. And I think that the criticism that there isn't enough praying or Jesus in the movie is silly. Because if you watch the movie, there is praying. It's just not verbalized.
I think it's done through her actions.
It's done through her actions when she is making her appeal to her sisters to press forward in you know, in this new foreign place, and when she's making her appeal to the Senate to allow her to help these people, and invoking their souls and what they're doing for the poor and how they can. She does it a lot for all the verbalized things are for other people, but then even going back to her drowning, it's every time that she goes back to that, it's almost like she's saying, like, God gave me this new lease on life. What am I here to do with it? I'm here to do what he wants me to do. And that's not verbalized, but I think that it's maybe better that it isn't, so that more people can relate to it, because we all have those moments where we're thinking about something happening in our past, and you know, for a lot of the faithful, that is, you know, in the form of prayer. But, you know, for a lot of the non-faithful, they do these things too, and maybe they are praying and they don't know it, but, you know, it's something that anybody can
relatable
come in
through. That sense. Yeah, it really is. And to Father's point, I did also hear that from some of people that have viewed it before me, especially because it had been out a week at that point, and they're like, oh, have you seen this movie yet, Carrie? It's really great. But, and I was really viewing it through the lens of, all right, I'm going to put that aside and just kind of make my own decisions on it and kind of come to my own conclusions. That didn't bother me one ounce. It didn't bother me one ounce because anyone, if you are Catholic and you see this work being done, you know they're praying. You know that their spiritual life is in check, because any Catholic that watches that or Christian should know that we cannot do any of this without God by our side, especially what she accomplished. So it didn't bother me one ounce. Actually, I was kind of glad that people said that to me, because then I just dismissed it and just kept moving on with watching it and enjoying it. I'm like, this is great, you know? And I was on just such a high after watching it. I walked out of there and I was like, I'm Italian. I'm an American. I'm a woman. I want to be a saint like a Brady. Like, literally, that's how I felt. Like, I just took so to heart, like, that, like, calling to sainthood, and just trying to persevere through the difficult times in my own life, you know, because I live in a very different time, thankful for people like Mother Cabrini and her sisters and my ancestors who lived through that for me to have a better life here in the States and to be born in this country and have the many opportunities that I have.
You know, it's interesting. It didn't even pop into my head that there might be sort of like that cultural factor from from the Italian standpoint. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm like a quarter Italian, and yeah, I know who met my great grandmother, and I am aware of history and how everything went down, and you know what she had to go through when she first came over, and how difficult it was for her. But it didn't occur to me that we would be seeing signs like that. It's a good reminder, actually, culturally, and it sounds like you know, we have these conversations on the podcast regularly, depending on who we have on, but we have a lot of Catholic Charities people, and it's always relying a lot on Matthew 25. And, you know, that's, you know, it's the same deal. Like, you know, Catholic Charities doesn't necessarily, I mean, everybody prays and everybody does their stuff, but it's not necessarily the public facing part of their job. The public facing part of their job is working with all of these people. Mm-hmm. Come to think of it, even with all the time I've spent with the CFR sisters down in Atlantic City, I don't know that I've ever actually prayed with them, like, other than like on the job while they're doing something. Like, but yeah, I mean, their grace and their charisms come forward without me ever having once seen them pray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're very prayerful looking, and they're very, you know, kind and everything you would see. But yeah, I don't know that I've ever actually experienced their prayer life.
Mike, you should go to the Father Benedict House one time, because
I've been to the Father Benedict House.
No, but serve there, because at the end they do the midday prayer, which is really nice, and you have an opportunity. It is really beautiful to experience it. I've gotten to. But to your point, yes, that's not what's on the outside. That's not what we're seeing. We're seeing the good works, but we know because they are prayerful. And that's really, if you look at it through that lens, and anybody that is hesitant, because maybe they heard those comments, because they're definitely more prevalent. I've heard it in a lot of Catholic circles. Just look at it through the lens of, like, she's doing this work because she is praying.
Yeah.
And you'll be fine. But I do want to hear each person's favorite part. I do like to hear what stood out to you.
Were you going
to
say something?
I'll say something when we go.
Okay.
I do have, like, maybe one and a half criticisms of the movie. If they did, like, one and a half things differently, it would have been maybe perfect. But I'll talk about that when we go around.
Oh, no. You bring it up right now.
Okay. And then give your favorite part.
Yeah, I'll give my favorite part after. So, you know, it isn't without any fault. This is maybe the half part. I would have genuinely loved. There's this character, her name is Vittoria. She's a prostitute. And she, at the very first, when they first land on the shores, they first get to Five Point, she helps the sisters in a tough situation. And despite herself, despite, you know, her lifestyle, and despite the danger that she could face by doing this thing. And slowly throughout the movie, she comes, you know, and there's this lovely thing that they do where they make her wardrobe more modest throughout the movie, and she has her whole little conversion just through the witness of the sisters, essentially. But I would have loved to see her go to confession. You don't have to, like, hear it. Just, like, see her walk into a confessional and just have that one little bit in there. And I think that would have made it, you know, just that much better. And then the thing that I don't like that's actually in the movie is there's a point in time. It's interesting that with the Italians, a lot of the contention is racial, but against like with the Irish in power. And so you've got some Irish characters who are like, oh, you know, I remember when we were being oppressed like you guys are. And, you know, some Irish that are, now that they're in positions of power, they're just like high on that. And so that's kind of interesting. But there's this point where the bishop is in a meeting with the mayor, and the mayor is basically asking the bishop to engage in shady politics. And if basically the informal agreement is that if the mayor if the bishop drinks the bourbon, then they're sort of in cahoots. And then he did drink the bourbon, and I thought that was a little strange. I didn't like that. I didn't like that at all. I would have liked to see him like put it down and walk away and like have a little backbone. But my favorite part of the movie, that's hard. There's so much good in the movie, but I do like a couple of things. So Cabrini has this like totally unchecked ambition, and that causes her a lot of problems. And I thought it was interesting how every time that she was like going against the bishop or, you know, trying to essentially disobey a direct order from her superiors, things didn't work out for her. Mm-hmm. But I just love the characterization of her, because I talked to a seminarian who like seriously read her like readings and her writings and stuff, and he was like, that's exactly how she was, right? Like, she was just this totally ambitious, borderline unreasonable character, and it really worked out because she just had this incredible faith. And a lot of the movie is like the male characters, who men tend to be more you know, balancing the risk reward thing, and she's just like, nope, this is the right thing to do. I'm gonna go all the way. And so I just love that characterization of her. I thought it was really interesting and really fun, and and it just colored the whole movie and made the whole movie enjoyable.
For sure.
I think that's what I loved about the character of St. Francis Cabrini in the movie, is her strong personality. Mm-hmm. And to just answer your question, what did I like about the movie? Everything about it. But I was really fascinated by her conversations that she would have with the mayor of New York, mm-hmm. and the Archbishop of New York. And they were telling her, you can't do this, you can't do that, we're sending you back to Italy. Mm-hmm. And she worked within her limits. Like, she was obedient to the bishop, but she found ways around mm-hmm. to do the mission work that she felt the Holy Father had sent her to do. So she was saying, I'm going to be faithful to the Holy Father, Pope Leo, and I'm going to do my mission here in America. And these two men aren't going to stop me. I'll find ways around. Mm-hmm. And I love the way it would all work out, like just going and getting enough money. She wasn't allowed to ask for money, solicit funds, but she found ways around that to get this nice property in a part of New York that really
overlooking
put
the Hudson
in everyone's face. That,
oh, wow.
You know, she was doing this work, and the poor people were coming into that affluent part of town, and then the bishop was telling them to move. But she found, then they sent her to a property that had so many problems and mm-hmm. really wasn't a great place to work, and she made it work. Mm-hmm. Everything that she did, she always found a way around. Mm-hmm. And that's how God designed her. I mean, that's mm-hmm. how she was the woman that was meant to do this mission, and she lived up to her purpose. So that's what really inspired me.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we all have our own struggles and problems in our own era, and, you know, people telling us you can't do this or can't do mm-hmm. that, or you have maybe your health circumstance or where you were born or the language that you speak or whatever. And she didn't let any of those things. She just went with God and she did what she had to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was like a moral politician in a way.
Yeah.
Where she had to work with not only the church, but also the local government and
right.
and make things happen in that way. I thought that was fascinating too, where she legitimately had to negotiate and at the same time keep her mm-hmm. her faith in the forefront.
She really understood people. And she didn't have a degree in psychology or anything, but she used psychology to deal with those children that had such broken family life or background and mm-hmm. deal with these politicians, and really amazing stuff that was accomplished in that. And the fact that she was supposed to die in like less than 5 years coming to America because of her health, mm-hmm. she lived way beyond
really
that.
Interesting. She lived to be 67, I think it was.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, which was way past what they thought she could live.
Wow.
Yeah.
And she was buried where she thought she would
be. Yeah, she said, I'm going to be buried on the land by the Hudson. And she was buried on the land by the Hudson.
Very nice. Yeah.
Which I highly recommend if you ever have a chance, people listening to this podcast, make the pilgrimage up there. It's amazing. It's really, and right nearby is this place called the Cloisters. It's a museum. They've taken a monastery in France and reconstructed it here in America. Mm. Beautiful artwork, but across the street is that shrine of St. Francis Cabrini, and it's amazing.
Yeah,
to see her body in the altar there.
I never knew she was there, and it's actually funny enough, when I first came to college and I met Father Mazier, and I said, oh, I'm from North Jersey, like right outside New York City. And like the next thing he said was, have you been to the Mother Cabrini Shrine up there? And I was like, nope. And to this day, I still haven't been, I'm shameful to say. So definitely on my bucket list now to go up there and pay a visit, because I've taken her on in my litany of saints and really asking her intercession, because I was just so inspired from this movie. So definitely want to go.
Don't feel too bad. I've lived in South Jersey my entire life, spent many years in Philadelphia, and have yet to visit St. John Newman. I know. Everyone says the same thing.
I went there.
All right, we'll take you, Mike.
There you go. Sammy, what was your favorite part?
My favorite part would have to be, I think she went in front of, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was the Italian Senate. And it's just like this big group of men, and she just charges in, and they're all like, get her out of here. And she's like, no, like, you're gonna hear me speak. Your people are in like New York and they need your help. And it was a really nice scene.
Yeah. I like that. It sounds like she's, you know, a formidable woman, as I often like to say about people. What's like yourself, Carrie? A formidable woman. One who will not be denied.
We got to do the work for the church if we know how to get it done.
That's right.
That's how we work.
I am well aware. I wanted to get back to your two criticisms, though, because it got me to thinking that I think you're absolutely right. That would have been a cool scene if we had seen the prostitute walk into the confessional.
I think that would also assuage a lot of the criticism, too, because, you know, in a 2.5-hour movie, you're not going to show the entirety of an hour-long mass.
So many people.
You can show bits of the other sacraments too.
Who knows though? Is it accurate? Did she
that's
ever
true.
Go?
She might not have.
I don't think she's a real character. Yeah. Like, I don't think she's a real person.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
But you know, as someone who has difficulty with confession himself from time to time, and there's certainly lots of Catholics out there that have a difficulty walking through those confessional doors, that would have been nice to see. But to your other point about the bishop being in cahoots with the mayor, hold on. I'll just tell you.
I was trying to just glaze over that.
No. That is absolutely what you referred to as Hollywood license right there.
Yeah.
Everybody, you always need a villain, and people love to make the bishop the villain. Yeah. So I think that's pretty much what that was.
I think it's interesting because it's even like written into the bishop's character that he's not the villain.
Yeah.
He really genuinely does want to
help
Cabrini.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't think that it's possible. He feels like he's between like a rock and a hard place. Mm-hmm. So it's more one of those like dangers of you know, I heard it said once about like Judas that in a strange way that he was just trying to like, you know, make a little bit of money. He didn't think that Jesus would actually get caught because he's God. So, why would he actually get caught and crucified and all of that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, then they'd have a little bit more money. Then they could like, you know, go on their big tour of like the other cities in the area and, you know, everything would work out fine. But it's that like sort of in between, if we just like hedge this one thing, then, you know, maybe we could have something. It's like, no, you just need to do it what's right. And that's the danger. And we all sort of think like that, where it's like, if we just sacrifice this one good thing, you know, and I know it's not the right thing, but maybe we could like have this other, you know, sort of superficial benefit from it. And you know, that's a danger that we all fall to, because it's not, you know, the sins that are explicitly bad aren't the ones that always get you. It's the ones that seem good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
The devil works. That's for sure.
That is 100% accurate. Well, listen, you have all encouraged me to go out and see this movie, or at the very least, see it when it comes out on streaming.
For sure.
I can't tell you the last time I've actually been to a movie theater, which is a bummer to me, because I love going to the movies, and I want movie theaters to exist, and I think it's a great way to see something in a community, which is another thing you don't get to do when you're in streaming. You get to see it with other people, whether you fall asleep next to your best friend, or you watch it with your mother, or you watch it with your fellow Newman House folks. I do hope people will go out in a group and see it, because it sounds like it's outstanding. And I got to say, Angel Studios, I'm gonna have to like look them up a little bit. If they produce this and The Chosen, and the quality of it is both so well, I don't know. Maybe
they
need
to. They got some other ones. They had a lot of previews before, so they have some other ones coming up for sure. And we tip our hat to you, Angel Studios, for putting out Cabrini.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you all for joining us. This was absolutely wonderful. You're all welcome back on
the podcast
anytime you'd like. And feel free to be our permanent reviewers for all future Catholic movies. So we'll call you in every time. All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week.
God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.